Hi, this is Emily, bringing you your Canadian political news at CJMQ 88.9 FM. If you are looking in the house market for a home with some historical significance, look no further. The home of Jacques Parizeau, located in the Eastern Townships, is up for sale. The market value for the house is approximately $600,000, and the property extends for 3 acres. Jacques Parizeau was a Quebec politician renowned for his work in promoting Quebec sovereignty. Parizeau was also Premier of Quebec in 1994. Upon election, Parizeau had promised to hold a referendum to determine Quebec's fate as a nation. Parizeau became the leader of the Petits Québécois in the wake of the separatist movement in 1988. While Parizeau was very passionate and motivated to carry out the Yes movement for the 1995 referendum, he lacked the charisma and popularity that Lucien Bouchard would have to take his place. While his efforts were apparent, this did not come without some controversy. First, in Parizeau's speech following the Yes side's defeat in the referendum at 49%, he implied that the No campaign had won by financial influence and a strong support from the ethnic communities. Following the delivery of his speech came Parizeau's resignation as Quebec's premier. To this day, Parizeau never apologized for the remark he made during his speech. He did, however, realize the bitter disappointment got the best of him. Parizeau's legacy has mixed reviews. While he was perceived as the man who aided with the nationalization of Hydro-Quebec, the creation of the provincial pension plan, and a strong voice for the province of Quebec in general, he was also perceived as a blunt politician who nearly tore apart the Union of Canada with attempts to separate Quebec. So people either loved him or hated him. Parizeau had passed away in 2015 at the age of 84, but he has not been forgotten. The fact that Parizeau had a place of residence in the Eastern Townships had some significance as well as an alluring feature to the townships. His, I'd say, quote-unquote, legacy will be remembered even when new homeowners claim his former property as their own. A latest report released by Tourism Montreal has indicated that 2017 was a good year for tourism in Montreal. The city saw an increase in 5.1% from the year prior, which increased the city's revenue to $4 billion. The objective of Tourism Canada was to increase tourists visiting Canada from overseas. As such, visits from tourists overseas had increased 11% for the city of Montreal. We should as well count that Montreal is Quebec's largest city, therefore is prone to attract more and more people. As well, it is Canada's second largest city, which makes it a tourist magnet. The city saw the majority of its increase from France and China, whose visitors represented increase by 9% and 33% respectively. Montreal is also a place of cultural diversity. Residents speak at least two or more languages. As well, it has small communities such as Chinatown, Gay Village, Little Italy, and of course is composed of a mix of English and French-speaking citizens. As well, there are various festivals throughout the year that attracts many people from near and abroad. One of the main contributions to the increase in tourism is the special events associated with Montreal's 375th birthday and Canada's 150th birthday. With Canada 150 came the free admission to natural parks and tourist areas. This incentivized people to visit Canada, as the cost of visiting Canada was reduced, with money saved from free admission. The 375th anniversary of Montreal marketed the location as the go-to place for 2017. One of the major pull factors for tourism includes history. Montreal is one of the cities with the most history, and being there for the 375th makes it all the more significant, as there were many festivities in Montreal to celebrate its birthday. Tourism, as such, is a major component of the Montreal economy. With a greater flow of tourism brings greater spending in the Canadian economy and contributes to jobs by greater demand for labor. For example, 3 cashiers will need to be on the floor opposed to 1. What we are seeing more and more is Canada becoming a trendy travel location. Consider, for example, Newfoundland, which has increasingly been a go-to destination, which complements its improved marketing of the province. Returning to the latest figures of Montreal, what we take away from this increase is that Montreal is and has always been a thriving city. Despite Toronto becoming the economic capital of Canada, Montreal has proved to be ever more prospering, and revenue from increased tourism contributes to this economic prosperity. The Quebec government will be investing $11 million annually dedicated to reducing the amount of runaways. Segments of set investments will be allocated to hiring 60 professionals and making clinical support available at youth protection clinics. The underlying objective for this initiative includes informing youth runaways of the potential dangers associated with running away, such as the risk of sexual exploitation and the many consequences associated with said activity. The motivation was prompted by several girls running away from a youth center in Laval approximately 2 years ago. Another incident in 2016, five girls had run away from a youth protection home within the span of a week and a half. According to the Public Security Minister, Maxime Coiteau, the funding is supplementary to a $3 million investment in 2016, contributing to a five-year project called Prévention Jeunesse. Funding for this program is imperative, as girls who run away from home will likely enter into street work such as prostitution. The case of Julie Béraud is an example of that. Back in the early 2000s, Julie Béraud, at age 14, disappeared from her home in Milan, Quebec, before being found 3 years later. She reported having entered the prostitution ring before running away from the second life and returning to the townships, and was found living with a man. Runaway children is becoming an increasing concern in Quebec, particularly in the city of Montreal. According to Stats Canada, there were approximately 4,987 runaways in Quebec for the 2016 year. As well, health services are often unattainable, making for hardships for people going through difficult times. Therefore, government investments are necessary to invoke improved health services. Thousands of Canadians go missing annually, and governments need to help any way they can in reducing these numbers. Funding local and city organizations is one step towards reducing the percentage of runaways and missing persons in Canada. With the provincial election in sight, the PQ is making policy proposals that are the most compelling to voters. One of set policy proposals includes increasing the speed limit on provincial highways from 100 kilometers an hour to 120 kilometers an hour. This comes from many appeals to increase the speed by members of the PQ and is supported by the Bloc Québécois. The proposal is submitted as part of the revision for the Highway Safety Code. The government will likely test this initiative primarily as a pilot project, and this is to see whether the proposed new speed is functional and is an effective solution to align with the tolerance zone speed police typically follow. The tolerance speed is roughly between 100 kilometers an hour to 115 kilometers an hour. I say roughly because it all depends on what the officer perceives as tolerable, but the average falls between these brackets. So simply because drivers travel at about 110 kilometers an hour on autoroutes, it is a mechanism of further regulating highway speeds. It is also to ensure people traveling anywhere between 100 and 120 kilometers an hour know they are within the legal limit and won't have any concerns about being pulled over. Across Canada, the highway speed varies. For instance, the highway speed in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick is 110 kilometers an hour, and the highway speed in PEI is 90 kilometers an hour. What people don't realize is the revenue acquired from speeding tickets has a good chance of decreasing because police officers will no longer be handing out tickets for drivers going 120 kilometers an hour. The chances of people driving faster than 120 is unlikely, given that they are not accustomed to driving at that speed. There is much ambiguity in terms of what speed drivers should be traveling because of the varied tolerance level. This initiative would be a way of regulating and updating speed laws, like what much of the other provinces have already done. In federal politics, I wanted to provide a recent update on federal election polls and explain what is occurring. First, to establish that the Conservatives and the Liberals are tied in first at 36% with a few decimal points off, nonetheless, they are tied for first. The NDP has secured the third spot at 16.9%. The Green Party is now at 5.8%, taking the fourth spot ahead of the Bloc Québécois, who has a mere 3.1%. The Bloc had previously been at 5% in July of last year, but has since taken a downward spiral, plummeting to just over 3%. The Tories were briefly in the lead ahead of the Liberals. This was mainly due to the great dissatisfaction with the Liberals' presentation of the federal budget a few weeks ago. The NDP support has been steady and constant. Since midsummer last year, the NDP has remained hovering over 15%. The Green Party has as well been steady, hovering over 5%. The Bloc was the only party that had been steadily declining, and this is partly due to the friction within the party. Based on the weighted averages conducted in the polls by CBC, if we had an election today, the Liberals would secure government for a second term under a minority government at 166 seats in the House of Commons, followed by the Conservatives trailing behind at 146 seats, which would secure them status as the official opposition. The NDP would accumulate 25 seats, which is about the average number of seats they hold in the House of Commons. The Green Party would secure its one seat, most likely Elizabeth May's riding in Saanich Gulf Islands in BC. And the Bloc would have 0 seats. For a party that is supposed to be representative of the French Canadian, this would be an ultimate failure in the eyes of French Canadians. I want to look specifically at the polls for Quebec, as we have seen quite a shift in political affairs, mainly with the fallout of the Bloc Québécois. We have the Liberals with a well-ahead lead at 40.6%, followed by the Conservatives at 21.4%, the NDP at 18.2%, and the Bloc in fourth with 13.6%. The Liberals securing the province of Quebec is a major factor in considering much of the House of Commons seats are from Quebec, so it is important for the Liberals to have this cushion of seats, given that they are tied with the Conservatives at the federal level. The Bloc being in fourth behind the NDP, which was rather uncertain whether they would be favorable with newly elect Jagmeet Singh, demonstrates an all-time low for the Bloc Québécois. The Bloc has never had this low of support since its prominent years in the 1990s and since the early 2000s when they had approximately 42% of the popular vote. So it is a sink or save situation. Either they sink the ship in keeping Maxime Ouellette as leader and confirm what headlines are saying, that it is the end of the Bloc Québécois, or they can change the face of the party and potentially soar in the next federal election. What the late 2000s have demonstrated is that the Bloc Québécois has lost its trust in the voters, and this is partly due to the sponsorship scandal, and this is evident in the 2011 and 2015 federal elections. In 2011, the Bloc Québécois had secured 4 seats, and in 2015 they secured 10, but now that is decreased down to 3. So ultimately, what these polls indicate is the Bloc's loss will be the Liberals' gain in Quebec. Where the Bloc has lost or is lacking support, the Liberals will swoop in and grab the support. It does help that the Liberal Party's leader, Justin Trudeau, is fluent in French, which greatly appeals to French Canadians. Because we are seeing more bilingual party leaders, this does come to question the purpose of a French-based party at the federal level. I will provide updates on the Bloc Party's status, as well as the latest federal election polls, in later reports. An update on NAFTA negotiations. Americans are hasty to wrap up NAFTA negotiations. This is partly due to elections scheduled to be taking place among the partner countries. And Trump is using this as to maintain the political advantage. One of the elections is taking place in Mexico, while the other will impact American Congress and could mean making Trump's views less favorable in Congress. Players in NAFTA negotiations have expressed how little capable it is to conclude NAFTA negotiations as early as spring, given how matters are more complex than simply shaking hands and rendering a verbal accord. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau visited with workers involved in the aluminum and steel industry in the cities of Alma, Quebec, Hamilton, Ontario, and Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, in support of these industries. It's also a manner for the PM to comfort workers given there's a lot of uncertainty regarding NAFTA's future. This comes from the threat of Trump's imposition of duties on Canadian aluminum and steel. Trudeau had reportedly told President Trump over the phone that such a duty imposition would harm ongoing NAFTA negotiations. Strategists have stated that the imposition of duties on Canadian aluminum and steel would backfire and harm the U.S. in return. This is supported ever more by a poll conducted by renowned economists at the University of Chicago, which found that among participants, 0% believed applying tariffs would help Americans. As such, Canada is the U.S.'s largest foreign supplier of steel and aluminum. But of course, convincing the current U.S. president not to impose tariffs is a difficult task, as Trump has a mind of his own. With great uncertainty of the imposition of duties, it is relevant for Trudeau to have a good relationship with the president, as being on good terms with President Trump seems to be the manner by which you can have favorable policies with the U.S. It's almost as though Mexico and Canada are walking on eggshells and trying not to upset Trump. I like to call it not poking the bear. Otherwise, retaliation is on suit. It is as though Trump is playing a game, getting close to the idea of eliminating NAFTA, and then not going through with it. Some have argued that Trump is using coercion, the threat of abolishing NAFTA, to get what he wants, and there never was a plan to eliminate NAFTA. That being said, what is important to understand is that Canada and Mexico are onto Trump's schemes. And for example, the Mexican president knows Trump will attempt to invoke loopholes in the agreement so as to pay for the Great Wall Trump wanted Mexico to pay for. And there's no question if Trump sets high standards that Canada will not agree to this and walk away from the agreement. We know this to be true because Rona Ambrose had stated Canada has a backup plan if NAFTA is ultimately abolished. Based on what is seen, NAFTA talks are seemingly less threatening than previously discussed. We can see Trump squirming in his seat as he is sort of backed in a little corner. Trump realizes the longer he fusses and disagrees with provisions of NAFTA, the less likely he will get what he wanted. And this is, as I've previously stated, is due to congressional elections, which will make Trump's decisions less favorable in Congress. And wrapping up NAFTA negotiations this spring is too short notice. Therefore, it is evident Trump bit off more than he could chew going into NAFTA revisions, and is doubtfully he will get what he initially demanded. I'll provide the latest updates on NAFTA negotiations as they further develop. That is your Politics in Action report. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you the next time. I am Emily with CJMQ 88.9 FM.